Hello and welcome to Weekly Open. I'm Brian here with Cred and Don. We're excited to have y'all here with us for another episode. Let me tell you about our partners at FTX. Go to weeklyopen.com/FTX where you can trade today. It's super simple. Just download the FTX app using the link weeklyopen.com/FTX. Go directly from one asset to the other with zero trading fees. It is a seamless experience. Perfectly managed. Track your portfolio like you've known and loved since 2014 and enjoy it. All right. Thanks to them. Gentlemen, how you doing? Cred, you're on top. How's it going, bud?
I mean, look at this chart, right? I mean, how about, what's the reasonable answer to that type of question? Pretty good.
We'll get to that. Don, how are
you? Yeah, we will.
Good. I was actually sick like a couple of days ago, but now I'm feeling amazing. So,
and he felt so amazing that he extended his surfing holiday for another week.
Yes.
Any sort of market signal. I don't know exactly what it is.
But I mean, it's honestly like 80% the chart being just ugly and 20% me wanting to stay. But yeah. Yeah. I was like, I'm not going to come back to this kind of price action. It's just not happening.
It is. I mean, I wrote an article. I actually sat down and wrote something. So I was expecting the market to disappear immediately or double because it was about the whole concept of capitulation, which people should read if they haven't.
Yeah, I wrote it. Can you describe the post?
Yeah, I mean, for people who don't want to read my wonderful work, all 9 minutes worth of it, the TLDR was basically capitulation exists on both sides of the volatility spectrum. So that means you either get blown up by that massive outsized candle that goes far, far lower than you ever thought possible. And especially if you've got leveraged positions on, you just get completely wiped out, right? And then on the other end of the vol spectrum is just this complete trendless, choppy, zero liquidity, zero interest type of market, which gradually chips away at your trading balance as you try to trade it or you employ strategies that worked in the bull market that aren't working now, or some version of that plus fundamentally just getting bored. And every rally that happens afterwards, be it real or not, is just kind of disbelief. And then the worst case, or you know, the most tricky scenario, I guess, is the synthesis of those two, where you get the blow up candle that completely just crushes price and your net worth. And then you get the low volatility conditions where it's impossible to make anything back and you feel like all hope is lost, yada, yada. So just kind of that's what the article is about with some examples and some attempts at humor, whatever. You can go read it on my Twitter thingy.
Go read it. I resemble this cope. on that, yeah, we'll get to that. We're going to start with, our grievances of the week. This is one of our ideas for a new segment, something that could be getting on our nerves, giving us something to complain about. We always have something to complain about. So that's what we're going to do. Cred, do you want to lead us off or do you want to defer?
Yeah, sure. Why not? I mean, my petty grievance of the week is the sentiment or the premise that, oh, I can't wait for a bear market because X, Y, Z good stuff will happen. And I just think it's fundamentally unsound. And that's for a few reasons. The first is that whatever prices you think you'll want to buy at or trade at, even if the idea in principle is correct, the likelihood that it goes that low and then you'll be willing to actually act on it instead of shitting yourself, that's a very low probability. And even if you do end up getting some sort of bottom, the chances that you puke that bottom as the market grinds, moves sideways and does nothing, those odds are pretty damn high. So it's not a good environment in terms of just crypto jobs and building and, you know, capital inflows, how easy is it to raise money, et cetera. You know, when the space is dead, it kind of sucks. And I guess one final argument is that people are willing to stomach all of that if it means, for example, that, oh, all the influencers go broke or all the moon boys will go away or, you know, essentially some version of the argument that the bad actors in the space will somehow be washed out by prices going low enough. And I think at this point, the evidence is fairly conclusive that that's just not true. Those people are like cockroaches. They'll survive no matter what the environment and then come back either in worse form later in the market cycle, or you just get worse version of them in the next market cycle. So it doesn't feel any, even if they capitulate, you get an upgrade or I guess a downgrade when the market picks up again. Like, you know, Parabolic Trav, his Pokemon transformation was in the plan B as a kind of anecdotal example. But the idea that these people, you know, the Moon Boys, influencers, whatever you want to call them, the actors that you don't like, the idea that they go away as when the market goes away, it's just not true, because they either come back worse or they get terrible replacements. So all in all, this idea that, oh, the CT is so much better when it's a bear market, this, that, and the other, I don't think it generally stands up to scrutiny, and it's not something you should probably wish upon yourself or your peers. Don't know how you guys feel about that.
I would not have gotten that Pokemon reference until this year, because my oldest son is into Pokemon now. So I now understand the transformations or mutations, whatever they call it.
I mean, you're dancing for TikTok, so it's about time you get acquainted.
I need to know these things now that I'm a TikTok influencer.
Lean into the role.
I totally agree with you, actually. I don't think there's any way to get the influencers out, because running like a Twitter profile or YouTube channel doesn't cost you anything, right? So you can just do whatever you want to. And then just return once the market turns around. And that's what we've been seeing, right? I mean, Superman, for example, one of the influencers from 2017-18, shilled garbage to everyone. Everyone
allegedly,
watched
right?
him. Allegedly.
Superman in Minecraft.
Allegedly, of course. And then everyone that kind of bought that shit went broke. And a year or two later, people Google or like YouTube, okay, who's like someone to follow? They see him, they see that he has a bunch of followers that are like 90% dead, but still. And then the show continues, right? Goes again. So there's no way to kind of separate crypto from the grifters, I think. It's just, we're always going to have them.
And that includes us. We're not going anywhere. You can't get rid of me. Just to be clear, you know, not playing holier than thou here as someone who makes, I guess, YouTube videos and content, etc.
I'm willing to go second for grievance of the week. And my grievance is stop betting on stuff, guys. Stop pulling it out and putting it on the table, measuring sticks and all that stuff. Just stop. It's not worth it. Now, for Duquan's credit, the founder of Terra Luna, he's going to donate $1 million to whatever Angel Protocol is, and spend another $1 million. But this is all supportive of his network. But the founder of a project should not be betting on the price of the token that his project puts out. It just is not. Mm-hmm. It is not the best look. I do not like it. I think whatever for the other guy, the Algod guy, like maybe it's a good trade, maybe it's not. But just stop betting on this. Bet on an open market. You don't need people escrowing your bets and all this stuff. Just stop it. Just stop it. That is my grievance of the week. It is just like there's no good financial incentive here. It's a terrible risk reward trade. And just bet directly in a liquid open market that's bi-directional, and stop arguing. Your egos are far too large.
Don, any take on that?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly think whenever you see any protocol or any protocol founder talk about the price of the token, you should fucking sell and run.
It makes me very scared about any protocol when that happens.
Yeah, I mean, legitimately, I see price talk from any project, and I'm like bearish on it. It doesn't have to go down immediately, but that stuff usually happens at the tops, or that happens for Ponzi's, and doesn't happen for anything in between, right? Like the solid projects, they don't need to kind of do that, in my opinion. You don't need to be like, oh, my protocol is worth this and this, and that's why it's good, because that's just not true, right? Like the price of any crypto doesn't really say too much about how good or bad it is. And if you kind of take too much pride in your token's price, I mean, that just makes me bearish. Yeah. But I don't want to shit talk Luna too much, because people are going to fucking go and get like the pitchforks on Twitter. I know how that goes, and I don't want to get stuck into it, but it's not good, in my opinion.
Yeah, I generally agree. I think just, you know, history on average shows that cults of personality around devs and stuff like that don't tend to go terribly well, or at least they emerge at rather uncomfortable points in the market cycle. So, you know, if it ends up as a net positive and lots of money goes to charity or whatever, I'm sure you can make arguments for that, and that's cool. But in general, when you get cults of personality around projects and founders, and we're all in this together, we're all going to make it, community type of stuff, you're not early, you know.
What could possibly go wrong with this chart anyway? Don, do you have a grievance of the week?
Yeah, I actually, like, it's really hard to have a grievance of the week, because I've just not been looking at crypto for the most part. But the one thing that I did get a bunch of mentions for was basically like a bunch of people saying, hey, I thought you were a trader. Why are you not trading like this kind of bear market drawdown thing? Shouldn't you be like able to trade anything, whether price goes up or down? And I find that so stupid as someone that has done that in 2018, right? And basically put all my time into trading the market and made a bunch of money, right? But not nearly as much as I would have made if I wasn't burned out in 1920 and would have had like all my mental capacity to kind of take advantage of the bull market more. It's just stupid in my opinion. If you waste your energy in the bear market or in the chop, right? And I've done this before, so I know, then you won't have it in the bull market. You don't have the time to relax in the bull market. And if you're going into bull market completely stressed, that's just going to fuck you up, right? And then the other half of my petty grievance is basically people coming to me and being like, yeah, but we should be trading this because you kind of improve your trading skills, whatever. And I think that's also kind of not true, because the only thing that you learn during chop or during bear markets is kind of not trust the market. You're like, you fade everything. You take profits early. You kind of abandon positions, even if you have like high conviction in them, just because you need to. And you generally learn how to trade poorly, I think, in bear markets. So not even that argument, at least in my mind, holds true. So what you're basically doing is you're trading something that doesn't give you much returns and you have to spend a lot of time doing it. And then you also kind of form bad trading habits while doing so. So it's like the worst combination of everything. And I think in general, for the most part, people should just be trading bull markets, like straight up. Market goes up, you should be trading it. The market goes down, you should not be. You should just be risking off and kind of trying to time the entry well enough that you can get into the next run up and not get chopped in between. So like, that's kind of my grievance. And as someone that does this for a living and has been for a while, this just makes sense for me to kind of spend my time on the markets while the market is only going up. And then when the market is only going down, especially now, nowadays, I just want to do something else. I don't really see the point. And not everyone is as kind of adept at kind of looking at the market the entire time and not get burned out like Ledger is. I'm going to die if I do that every day. So yeah, that's what gets like what grinds my gears nowadays when people try to argue with me that as a trader you should be trading everything, because I think that's not true.
No trade is a trade anyway.
Yep.
Yeah, you make a really good point about habits in different market conditions. Like if you think about the people who struggled to do as well as some of their peers when the market was up only, it was always in reference to some sort of 2018, 2019 PTSD, right? That's yeah. Even what we called it in the discourse. It was like, oh, I've got PTSD, this is going to bart. It's a she candle, you know, like all this stuff. The question is, where does it come from? And it seems to be the case that in the overwhelming majority of cases, that type of approach to the markets and that distrust, as you put it, it comes from basically burning out trading awful conditions, right? And it comes from bringing that baggage into totally different market conditions where you should, you know, be a bit more trusting and just when the environment is different. So you make a good point there. I mean, just in general, people telling other people when they should and shouldn't be trading without having an insight into the edge or whatever is a bit juvenile. If you feel like you have to trade, the likelihood that you have an edge is, I don't know, seems pretty low to me.
Good stuff. All right. So the next segment that we want to test out here today is a little different because it's not our own grievances or our own take, but it's shouting out someone else's. Best or worst, a take, a point of view, something like that, that we want to highlight, something that we've seen recently. Craig, again, do you want to give us a go?
Yeah, for me, I really went for the low-hanging fruit. It was Tom Brady unretiring.
Nice.
So I don't know, you know, that all these sponsorship deals and, I'm going to take some of my money in crypto and all these advertisements. It really says something, at least, about the state of the market that the guy's moving, you know, unretired, having had such an illustrious career. Just, you know, how long was it? It was like a few months, right, at most, that he was retired. And then crypto being one of the main other things he was into. I mean, look, I'm being charitable here. It's either that or he hates his wife and kids, and I'm just hoping it's not that explanation. So I'm being generous here and blaming crypto. But for me, that was just like absolutely hilarious. Volatility's dead. And as soon as we had that big sort of Bitfinex sell and spike down, the next headline is Brady's coming back. I'm like, listen, mate, I don't blame you one bit.
Yeah, for sure. I'm guessing it's not because his crypto stuff is down. I think, man, I have this begrudging, enormous respect for Tom Brady because, you know, I've never been like a Patriots fan or anything. So that was hard to root for him, but he's absolutely the GOAT. So you got to respect it.
Oh, for sure.
It's
a very tongue in cheek type of thing about the state of the market. You know?
I honestly think with professional sportsmen like him, it's just, when you stop, you don't really know what to do with your time, right? You just sit at home and you're like, holy shit, the day has so many hours and I don't know how to fill them. And I think if you're a family man like he is, and you can't go out and party and do drugs and everything, like a lot of other like people in the sport business do, I think it's just going to be boring for a lot of them. So I'm not surprised to see him come back just based on that.
And he's still good. Like, he's still really good. He hasn't fallen off. I feel like you just got to roll with it until you fall apart and then have like this ungraceful exit instead. But you're like, look,
do we sell when he retires again? Is that the trade? Like,
it's a double top.
Yeah, it's a double top. Yeah.
All right. Well, mine's a little bit of a multifaceted shout out, but I'm sure everybody's seen the news that Yuga Labs, folks that are behind the Bored Apes project, acquired CryptoPunks IP from Larva Labs. And then the first move that they did was to give full commercial rights to Punk owners, which was a big point of controversy. So shout out to them for that. I highly respect the move. I think the questions around like the conglomerate nature or whatever of an entity in crypto is interesting. And then I want to give a brief shout out to a couple of people with takes, you know, some of the big NFT folks, DC Investor, Punk6529, and some others. I pulled in one of them, but I like that generally there's this combination of being open to like things changing and then also having a stance for certain things that they value, which might be different than yours, but there's great debates going on around commercial rights, various types of copyright and things that are, I think, really important debates. And I love seeing these happen with the top collections. And I think that it'll end up in a good place. And I think overall, this is the right direction to take. Like if you buy a $10 million JPEG, I think you should have rights to do whatever you want with it. So shout out to Yuga Labs. Shout out to some of the top folks in the NFT landscape for having good, nuanced conversations with some principals. Do you have anything to add to that? Or good?
Yeah, sure. I like it as well. I feel like, you know, as far as low-hanging fruit criticism of NFTs, it's like, lol, it's just the picture, right-click, save, which is whatever, not particularly interesting. But then the first real criticism, if you will, is about ownership rights and IP, that you don't own the thing you think you've bought half the time, or at least, you know, rights and licenses in general as an area of law are pretty complicated. So if we see more leadership, if you will, in terms of what it means to own a blue chip piece, or if some of these premier collections take a more, you know, I guess a less custodial, more liberal approach to licensing and ownership rights, that generally sets a better tone and better precedent for the NFT space in general. And it would just be really nice to get rid of that bogeyman argument of, well, you don't actually own the picture itself. And unfortunately, in most cases, that tends to be correct, or at least closer to the truth than not. So if you have some of these big collections and these big acquisitions leading the way, and empowering their users, as you said, I think that's probably a net positive for the space. So hats off. And also, it seems like a good deal in terms of, you know, the circulating number that's
what
kind of
that?
Making the
What's
rounds.
What's that rumor?
I think from Loom, I heard 350.
350 million. Wow.
Yeah. And that included the IP itself and then the vault / treasury alongside it, something like that. Don, is that roughly?
Yeah, Meebits and...
Yes.
Cash they had on hand.
Yes. Yeah,
but I'm not entirely like I don't want to like blanket agree because I don't remember. It's been a while.
I think
my brain is fried.
That sounds like a pretty good deal to me, honestly.
Yeah. If it's true, again, I'm just This is the number floating around. I haven't verified it for myself. No one talks to me anyway. So
yeah, we're allowed to talk about rumors that are completely impossible to. but yeah, that's an interesting number. I want that kind of reminds me. You remember Disney bought Star Wars for like $4 billion or something like that, and it seemed like a lot of money. But it's like, wait a second, this is Disney. They're going to put it on every park. They're going to make like 17 shows about it. Like they'll make this in spades. So I would not be surprised. And it also, I think you're obviously Bored Ape's price had gone up a ton, but now you're kind of permanently putting it in that bracket of blue chip because it's under the same umbrella.
Yes.
Interests me as well. Don, what you got?
I mean, for me, it's basically been, I haven't looked at Twitter mostly for the entire week, so there's not that much that I saw.
Every one of Don's answers is just prefaced with, well, I've been surfing on holiday, but
no.
Let me attempt to entertain you plebs with my 2 minutes of browsing.
No, and I looked at Twitter for like an hour before the show to kind of find something, but I honestly gotta say, like, most of the stuff that you're gonna see there is just kind of not worth your time. Like, I don't know if I'm following the wrong people or if it's just shit posting nowadays, but I did not find anything that was like particularly bad or particularly good. It's just all entertainment stuff. And I think that speaks a lot about the state of the market that we're in, where people try to look at everything besides the charts. And I mean, we started off the same way, right? We started with like talking about stuff that annoys us instead of looking at the charts. And I think that's just basically because the charts are so bad. So I don't have a particular tweet because, yeah, there's just nothing interesting on Twitter for me, at least.
So sorry about that. Your shout out for take of the week is that none were worthy of your attention.
No one is worthy.
Yeah, I mean, Gainsy at least entertains, but everything else is just like, I don't know. It's better spend your time elsewhere. And I mean, I'm saying this from a guy that, like, as a guy that uses Twitter for most of my stuff, and it's just, I don't know, it's not worth spending time on during this kind of market cycle, I think.
That's awesome. All right. Well, that takes us into market recap. What the heck has happened, and what do we think is going to happen in the coming days? I had the weekly chart up on the screen, but Cred, I believe this is your screen.
Yeah. I think we're more or less in the same place we were when we recorded last week's episode, right? It's we talked about this 38K kind of crypto native bid, if you will, that type of area, which keeps finding rather clunky bounces. Even just looking at this on the daily time frame, you know, I mean, this is quite abominable, right? And that's kind of all she wrote. If you want to be constructive about it, you end up making these weird arguments that the weekly chart looks so bad, but it hasn't dumped yet. So maybe it's so bearish, it might pump. I feel like that's the level of like, well, not mental gymnastics, but it's some pretty strained reasoning at that point to come to positive conclusions in the kind of mid to high 30s. I still think the market's, you know, it's quite clear that it's starving for a catalyst. And in general, just liquidity conditions just haven't been great. And a lot of these headline-driven moves have been mean reverting. If you're any type of even medium time frame trader, you know, kind of hourly, four-hour time frames, whatever, there really hasn't been a whole lot to bite at. I guess really short-term range stuff, as we said, 38-ish seems to be where a lot of these full retrace dumps are getting absorbed. And then closer to, you know, 40 or thereabouts is where it seems to be capped. So that's getting a bit tighter, but I really hate to squeeze water from a rock. I mean, just look at this thing, right? What kind of informed views am I supposed to have on a chart that looks like this? I guess on a higher time frame type of stuff, the main premise is the same, that some version of 30K holds, but if it doesn't, you pick it up much, much lower, and knife catching in the middle is kind of shitty. I imagine a lot of trend following momentum stuff gets activated above this clunky retest level in the low to mid 40s. You've got a bunch of the boomer moving averages. I think I can even turn them on. 21 weekly, 50 weekly.
If you can't, we can just toggle to my screen, Chris.
Oh, it's fine. Look, I came prepared. right? So the boomer trinity of 21 weekly, 50 weekly, 200 daily, they're all kind of aligned at this roughly, you know, 45, 50K handle. Those could still get retested and it wouldn't really change all too much. But there is a lot of space if those get smashed. And I really think that's a clear path to the top of the range, but that seems to be a bit of a tall order at the moment. So in terms of just new setups, because at the moment, really from high time frame closes, there's been nothing interesting in my opinion. There'll be some sort of momentum chase if this confluence clustery area breaks. Otherwise, you're hoping that the market basically continues to grind in the low to mid 30s until it's enough grinding and it actually goes up, because the alternative is 30K breaking, and then that will be one of those 30K is the new 6K, and you pick up 30, 40, 50% discounts if that's the case, because then you've got like a multi-year range low at that point being taken out, and that's not something you step in front of as soon as that candle starts to form, right? Or kind of too early in the breakdown phase. So it's still really boring. You know, I wish we could come on here and talk about the, you know, oh, market structure's broken, this changed, that changed, or anything spicy like that. But essentially, it's the same price as last week. Your best case scenario, I still think, is continued grind and not getting rugged by the real world. And then, you know, maybe some de-escalation, some positive headlines, whatever can give a bit of a pop. But really, it still looks stuck between 30-ish and 40-ish, you know, low to mid 30s, low to mid 40s. And until one of those wants to give, I think we'll be trendless on anything kind of daily time frame and above. I don't know what you guys think, but that's unfortunately the boring-ish picture.
You said that people are basically hoping that we grind in a bearish fashion for so long that it becomes bullish. And I think the big thing that enables that is we did that in summer 2021. So people are basically, you know, praying that you get something similar, right? That
it just
does this grind and then it's like, oh, okay, up only again, off we go.
Just the wicks are in the wrong direction, right? I saw CVS point this out, that on this grind we had all these downside wicks, whereas on this one it's all it doesn't make a huge difference. But yeah, structurally, because you know, below 30K, it's like, geez, you have to start entertaining some pretty less than pleasant scenarios, unless it turns into some amazing failed breakdown, yada yada type of thingy, which we technically already had in the summer, as you mentioned. So I don't know if that would play out a second time. But most of the market seems fixated on 30K holding, because if it doesn't, you know, you start reaching some uncomfortable conclusions. And the way that would have to work is just probably even longer period of grind and chop, and maybe futures get a bit excited and there's a fade set up, whatever. But, you know, we're still in the same high time frame area that was the focus when we watched much higher, and it's still playing out. It's just taking its sweet time by virtue of being, you know, a monthly level and all this macro uncertainty, bullshittery, whatever type of stuff. So grind, chop, whatever, with the price starting at three isn't a bad thing, I think, in general, because the alternatives are that much worse.
They are. We've started to see something in, speaking of the macro stuff, that I think is certainly at least worth watching, which is stocks mostly down, S&P is flat, but growth is down, but also gold and oil are down, and the dollar's down. The only thing up is rates. So yields moving pretty strongly. Everything else is down. And I don't know if there's anything to make of that yet, but that is not the correlation that we've been seeing. Basically been seeing positive moves out of gold and oil on days where, you know, growth stocks in particular are down. And then at the same time, we're seeing at least some degree of down day out of the Dixie. And I don't know if this is going to become, you know, something that we see throughout the week or what it means. But I definitely have seen at least a subtle shift in all the like legacy macro correlations versus what we saw for the past month or so. So maybe that means we're preparing for some kind of trend shift across those markets. I want to look out for that. But yeah, that's my only real thing to add. I agree with you completely on all things crypto, and to the point of your grievance about the start of the show, I think all of that stuff gets even worse when you talk about trying to do it with altcoins. You know, I tried to change my bias like several times last week, as Don trolled me about on Twitter. and it was because basically looking for that opportunity. Like, I agree, this trade, that 1 to 48 to 50K equivalency in Bitcoin, brings potential for some nice moves in some altcoins as well. And I was like, okay, this actually looks like it kind of wants to squeeze up. So many people have gotten sidelined one way or the other through all this nasty chop.
Yes.
And the problem is that 20% or whatever to the upside, maybe in altcoins that might end up being 40 or 50%, right? Like Solana to 120 is a 50% gain. And 120 is not exactly going to get all those Solana bulls excited. You know, it's just to this terribly bearish retest right here. That's awfully gross. So like, that's the trade I wanted. Problem is, if we capitulate to the downside, you could be in real bad shape real quick, you know, one or two dailies and you're at 50, 60 bucks. And I kept trying to force that and then realized I should probably take the Don approach of wait until something presents itself.
Mm-hmm.
Don, is there anything out there that you are watching for to say like the status quo has changed and I need to pay attention?
Yeah, as soon as he buys his return ticket from this holiday.
I mean, yeah, there's a bunch of, I can actually share real quick, like high time frame stuff that we can talk about.
Here comes the yearly chart.
No, it's the monthly, but it's still, the problem I have with the chart right now and why I'm saying like, don't even bother, right? Is because whenever you have a strong support somewhere and it gets tested, for the first time and it bounces strongly, that's like a decent sign that maybe the trend isn't over or we have some more strength, right? The problem with the current chart is we've basically tested the strongest support that we have on the monthly chart until all the way down to 14K, in my opinion. And what we've been doing is we put in one green candle that barely went to the next resistance and then got immediately rejected and went all the way back to support. Now, we've retested that support 3 times, right? In the matter of 3 months. And that's just not a good sign. That's like, you would have to have at least a little bit of a reaction off of a support level like this to get me the slightest bit interested, right? Because what this shows me is basically a bunch of people trying to support the price at 38 or like into the 30Ks. And because they're terrified of what happens if we lose it, but they cannot make it bounce strongly, right? There's no one willing to buy after they've bought. So what basically happens is we grind into all of those buys. And at some point, I imagine not just like they get enough. I mean, unless they have enough money to just buy it all, like buy everyone out. I could see this just like enough's enough and then we break down and people start capitulating, right? Because whenever you have these kind of artificial floors that we seem to be having right now, when those go, panic breaks out. And I mean, that's a good setup for like a capitulation event or something like that. But it's obviously not a good setup for the market to do well, in my opinion. Now I could be wrong on that. And I have like a pretty clear invalidation at this point, which would be a monthly close above 43K. I think that's pretty, it's already pretty aggressive because I could see it close above 43K, go a little bit up and then dump again. But for me, that's what I'm going to be watching. Like, I want to see at least a little bit of strength. And that's not really that much of a move if you think about it in monthly terms, right? That's 10% to like 15% up from where we are right now. That shouldn't be too difficult.
And we've done that in a day, right? Just yeah. We retraced it the next day. It's the only thing.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, if it cannot even do that, why bother? Why bother with buying a support that's been tested 3 times? Why bother buying with like a bunch of people that are buying 38K because they're terrified of what happens next? I don't know. Like, it's not me. I'd much rather buy once people capitulate. And I think that's going to be, given that we have like this floor and we're taking so long to kind of move, I think that there's a good chance that we move big time. So you can get your fills in the low 20s maybe if we nuke. Or if we get like a strong up move and we actually start like making this chart constructive, as in like make it into like a bigger range, maybe like close above, like maybe close at like 45, and then we can trade all the way to like 60K again or something like that, that'd be fine by me. But until then, I just don't see the point. And I mean, this is the monthly chart, right? And it's not the only one that's looking kind of shitty, because the weekly time frame is pretty much the same thing. Just on a lower time frame where we grind into support, and you can see how shitty this looks, right? If you kind of map this support out, And then you have four consecutive weeks just sitting on top of that. Just basically makes me think that there's like an artificial floor. They usually don't really end well. But I just hope I'm wrong and then it goes up and then they can buy into strength. But for
me,
it's
so bearish, it's bullish on those.
Yeah, I mean, like legitimately, like the only thing that can save this, in my opinion, is that people get so bearish off of this grind that they start shorting. And then these giga charts that are trying to hold up the market just squeeze them out. And then we have like some momentum, maybe a second push towards like 50K. And then we start dumping again, because that's how these kind of patterns always play out. But that's kind of the only way I see this play out to the bullish side. For me, if I had to make a bet, I mean, I said something different 2 weeks ago, but that was after having tested the support just freshly and not sitting on it for 4 weeks. For me, it makes more sense to go down than up. I wouldn't want a short monthly and weekly support, especially when there's a bunch of people trying to protect it. Because they have more money than I do. So I wouldn't want to just risk that. But I would not want to be buying with them. I'd much rather buy lower or actually into strength. And we've seen neither, right? It's just been boring, no movement whatsoever. People chopping, like getting chopped left and right. And just doesn't make much sense to do anything, in my opinion.
Yeah, it could have been like a 30-second segment, right? Like low 30-ish support, like low to mid 30 support, low to mid 40 resistance, vol down,
I think it
headlines
takes,
stuff
I think
still
it,
happening.
I think it takes
goodbye.
All 5 minutes to actually convince yourself of it though, right?
Yeah, yeah, no, that's definitely true. I know, I sometimes look at the S&P, like the, you know, the S&P 500 monthly chart, and I'm just like, I know this TA on this and the whole thing is a meme, but like, what is going on there, you know? It'd be nice for that thing to
what's
not
that,
look like it.
What's that meme story? Where the guy's like pointing in the mirror and he's like, you will not buy this pump.
Yeah, yeah.
Up 3%, all in. We're going up, baby, up only. That's what I'm tempted to do. So I have to tell myself, you know, we are still in the range of pain.
And especially with altcoins, right? Like you said earlier, I feel like the altcoins are even the worst bet than Bitcoin is right now, just based on the fact that even if it mega pumps, like if we get like a short squeeze, I think the altcoins could, at least on the initial pump, underperform, right? I could see them chase upwards if we squeezed, but only after the squeeze, right? So if you position yourself in altcoins now, you're going to make less returns, most likely, besides like the one or two that just pumped the strongest to get people to FOMO into them. So what happens is Bitcoin goes up, you make less money than if you were in Bitcoin, or Bitcoin goes down and you make a shitload more losses than you would have made in Bitcoin. Yeah. So it's kind of like the altcoins are an even shittier bet in this situation, in my opinion anyway, unless something drastically changes.
For sure. There's one other element of this, and I'm about to boomer you guys. But first, Don, the chat's worried about your laptop battery, so just FYI.
Yeah, I'll take care of it.
I shared this morning on Twitter, and people were like, I don't know what those numbers mean. I'm actually starting to see, as long as you're not entirely bearish on the forever future of crypto markets, Coinbase is probably the most public, the most visible publicly traded company, and actually their valuation and stuff is hitting straight like value territory. Price to earnings is at 11, which is not rich by any particular means, and their like general health as a company is extremely good. This is one of those where I feel like historically you think, okay, owning Bitcoin or something is always a better play. And what I want to ask myself is, do we have an opportunity here for something slightly different, right? Where if you're not totally sold on Bitcoin, if you're worried about the, like, you know, getting chopped up as the market capitulates, a capitulation event would just increase volume on exchanges and I think maybe make a company like Coinbase look more interesting and even more valuable. And I wonder if a public entity with, you know, real assets, real cash flows, real profits, et cetera, might be a slightly hedged position as we chop around, especially if we do that for a continued period of time. Do y'all think that's crazy or what?
Ooh, I think if I generally think about being long or buying crypto adjacent stuff, I need to have like a very clear thesis for it outperforming like the crypto native pump or the Ponzinomics that are built into the crypto assets that I like to buy on their own. I think in general, if you remember people who buy anything crypto except like Bitcoin and ETH, like, you know, there's this like weird Goldman Sachs index which had like Nvidia on it and all this other shit, people buying miners and all this like crypto adjacent stuff. I think on average, you know, the returns from doing so haven't been like fantastic compared to just buying the underlying, and people end up trying to outsmart themselves. My boring answer to that is I don't really have an edge in literally what you just talked about.
Yeah.
And it requires even more traditional market stuff than just looking at the indices and seeing if we're, you know, correlated, showing relative strength or not.
I guess I just think if I want to maintain some crypto exposure, but I don't want to get chopped to death with Bitcoin itself, like, you can look at more classical metrics in a company like Coinbase. And in my mind, it seems like at least a risk adjusted trade that might be worth making. I don't think you'll make as much if like the market turns around and, you know, Bitcoin goes nuts. I don't think Coinbase would keep up, but I do think your downside is a little better protected because you hit like value metrics that just are too insane, you know, because people are still going to trade on Coinbase throughout a bear market. Remember how like BitMEX volume like rocketed during the last bear market, and Binance did the same. And it's not to say Coinbase would keep up with that type of thing as a growth entity, but you know, they're launching their NFT stuff. As that gets volume, there might just be reasons to own a business that has positive cash flow. Versus like trying to predict it.
I mean, I don't mind it, honestly. The problem is that you're also taking a bet on Coinbase, right? You're not only taking a bet on the crypto market doing well, you're also taking a bet on Coinbase. And they've just, I feel like they've been slipping a little bit in relevance in comparison to other companies in the crypto space. Obviously, still very, very relevant, but not as much. So it kind of depends on your time horizon.
If our sponsor FTX was a public company, I would have pulled it up right next to it to see what it looks like. That's honestly a curious thing. Like, how does the market view that? You know, they did do a raise at a high valuation. I don't remember.
I mean, some of the listings on Coinbase recently, I mean, Jesus Christ, remember Portacol? Whatever that dog coin thing about dog insurance. I mean, it's awful. Their listings recently have been absolutely garbage.
Okay.
There was a certain point at which, you know, Coinbase listing was like the gold standard. And then they just started listing all these VC bags that, as someone who's spending like 18 hours a day on crypto Twitter, I'd never heard of any of these coins. I'm like, right, this is slightly different from what we're used to.
So I looked it up, and FTX's last raise was at a $32 billion valuation. Coinbase's market cap is just under 34 billion. So the private market for FTX and the public market for Coinbase are basically making them equivalent right now, which is certainly interesting. I think FTX has more volume overall at the moment.
Yeah, when Don comes back from holiday, watch out, right?
But yeah, I think it's not the worst idea. But as Craig said, I think in history, everyone that's kind of been betting on anything but the underlying has been doing poorly. So it's a pretty tough bet to make that that's going to change.
It's probably not the best option, but I do think it's something I want to keep watching, I guess, is the way I would put it. I think at some point there's going to be a nice trade there for exchanges that go public or exchanges that have, you know, tradable equity.
I'm too dumb for it. Just being transparent. I'm way too thick to sit there and do traditional market stuff.
Well, at a raw level, you look at something like price to earnings or some of the other like ratio type stuff that you can look at, and it just trades at a number, right? So if price to earnings of like 5 or 10 is basically a value stock, and it has the opportunity to trade at 20 plus when times are really good, nothing has to change other than people's perspective on, I think this company will grow. Like, their actual results don't necessarily have to change that much. You know what I mean? So if the market just determines, like, we will give a premium to these ratios because they are a growth company, because crypto's growing, whatever, then the price could go up purely because the market gives it a more favorable lens, not because anything actually changed about their business model or their execution of it, to your point, Don.
Yeah, I mean, the last time I tried to be giga smart and kind of do like the traditional market kind of thing, it was with GPTC, where I was like looking to buy and I was like spending all this time looking into it. And then it went negative, you know, against Bitcoin basically. And I was like, ah, maybe I'm going to pull the trigger. And I was watching it, and it just kept on going down. And it's not recovered, right? It's just been like shitty. Minus what, like 20% now in comparison?
Which one is that? The ratio?
GBTC. Yeah. GBTC to Bitcoins. It's like, it's kind of scuffed. And I never pulled the trigger because I was like, okay, this is like way over my head. I just don't understand. That's why I'm going to rely on you for the Coinbase stuff. Just copy you.
What's actually most incredible about GBTC is because it used to trade at such a premium and now it's trading at such a discount, it's actually spent a decent amount of time below and in some ways well below the 2017 highs.
Oh, man.
Nice. Yeah.
It on a weekly closing basis, it peaked at 31, 32, and it's at 25 right now.
That's so sad.
How sad is that? So,
oh man,
2x in Bitcoin from then, and you know, lower on GBTC if you just held GBTC instead of Bitcoin. Plus, you're eating that 2% fee every year.
That's what I was about to say. Like, imagine holding that, and then you bleed out by all like paying the fees. Just oof.
Yeah. I will say, for some reason, the GBTC chart sometimes ends up feeling a bit cleaner than the Bitcoin chart, and I don't know why.
Oh, Alpha League.
yeah. Probably means nothing at all. Probably just a bunch of junk, but it's something that I also think about. All right. That's all we have for, I think, the market recap. Do y'all have anything else that you want to say about the market? And then we'll move on to what we're looking for.
Ooh. I don't know. Like, I think it could end up being a hindsight-y type of bottom, right? Mm-hmm. Where the prevailing argument was, the market's going to range between 30 and 60 for the year, blah, blah, blah. It goes to 30. It bounces at 30. You know, the world's a piece of shit, but price like hasn't exactly gone to zero yet. And then just sheer purely out of boredom and by virtue of becoming, you know, Bloomberg head terminal headline chasers, you kind of lose sight of that bigger perspective that, you know, a 30 to 45 or 30 to 50 bounce isn't necessarily the most unreasonable thing in the world. And, you know, there's not much speculation going on in general. If you look at quarterly futures basis and just swaps funding in general and cash lending rates, like no one gives a shit at the moment. And that's generally not a bad place to play bounces. But you know, it's not for me at the moment, and I'm just focusing on other stuff. But just, you know, for the benefit of when I come back to this in like 2-3 weeks and maybe price has gone up 2%, I can be like, see, I planted the idea in your mind that maybe it was the bottom of some sort. But yeah, no, not a whole lot to say in terms of market commentary. All these time frames are scuffed. Even the daily, which tends to be like decently tradable, even within smaller ranges, it's kind of just been full retrace garbage city. So if, you know, if you're not losing money, you're probably outperforming most of your peers for what it's worth. Very boring, but also very true, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if you think back in history, like if you just go through some of the worst times and if in that time you managed to not lose money, how much more money would you have now?
Yeah.
I could think very clearly about something like that, right? I took a 50% same haircut on my, I don't think 50% counts as a haircut. It's a thrashing.
That's a buzz cut. Yeah. It's a decapitation maybe. Yeah.
So when I took a 50% buzz cut on my net worth, had I not done that, then the resulting upside was significant. I do think you're right. I think this is some of the most painful market conditions to trade in. And because I think there's absolutely no edge right now in trying to predict based on what crypto's doing, I'm basically looking at what other things are doing and then praying that crypto goes up when other things go up. I have heard some stuff recently, and oil's obviously corrected like 25% off of a blow-off top. I don't actually think that means that oil is necessarily done, and I think that that creates a lot of pressure on the market. Some random thing in legacy markets, again, is the futures that are like 3 and 4 years out, which is primarily hedge positioning from producers and stuff, is in massive backwardation. Like the 3 year out price is like $70 a barrel or something like that. In my personal opinion, I think that's like really interesting because it leads me to believe like that is a good purchase. Even if you don't think $100-$120 oil is a good purchase at this very moment, I actually think oil is going to have sustained higher prices. I think gold still has a chance to break out. The S&P 500 and the NASDAQ, they just look so ripe for massive capitulation to me. In the midst of all of this world uncertainty and stuff, like they simultaneously a significant bounce would not be surprising, but more likely seems like it just needs some crazy capitulation that everybody freaks out over. And, you know, people who've preserved their wealth, as you mentioned, Cred, have the opportunity for some life-changing type trades. And I want to be prepared for that, I guess. So I've been going back and forth, but this is a process for me. I have to chop myself up just enough over the weeks to then, you know, cross my fingers, have an opportunity for the real big trade, the one that matters. So get a couple of trims and try to avoid the buzz cut so that then I can be ready for the big show. Don, what are you looking for?
Yeah, I mean, I'm basically doing the same thing. Like, besides, like, just getting myself chopped up because I'm not going to bother. But yeah,
he's
just
better
waiting
than you, Ledger. That's what he's saying.
No. It's just basically me being too lazy. Because the thing is, I don't necessarily think it's bad to sit here and then trying to poke the market from time to time to see if it's still alive. I think that's actually probably worthwhile doing, as long as you know that you're doing that instead of just taking wild gambles left and right. As in, you think 30K is the bottom, you take a stab at it, you see, okay, it's not doing what I wanted to, I'm just going to let it go, and then you try again a week after. I think that's fine. But in general, it's the easier trade for me is just sitting tight and waiting for strength. And like you said, Ledger, the traditional markets just kind of look rough to me. And I don't think anyone knows how any of this is going to play out. You see like all these theories being thrown around and everyone is like, okay, this is war, this is bearish. And this is, I mean, how are you going to trade that stuff, right? Barely anyone has ever traded in these kind of conditions. Now you have COVID in China again, and all this news driven stuff that I think goes way, way beyond of what we in crypto are capable of trading. So might as well just not do it. And that's kind of where my head's at. Which
Don's message, give up.
Yeah, I mean, for now, give up for now. That's my kind of message. And then come back when it's fucking easy again. And it's going to be easy again. And crypto always gives these kind of opportunities. The problem is it's going to give you those opportunities when it's been so boring for so long or so painful for so long that you actually don't even want to bother anymore. That's kind of when it gives you those opportunities. I'm not entirely sure if we're there yet. It's getting really, really boring. You just have to look at Twitter and see that 90% of the posts are about like either food or people fighting or people taking bets with each other or just in general, barely anyone posting. Whenever it gets that boring, you have like the potential for some volatility at some point, at least in history, that's been the case. The last time it's been really this boring, I would say it was right before the 6K floor broke. Doesn't mean we have to do the same thing again. It just means that I think at some point this is going to accelerate big time.
Big move incoming.
Which no, I don't think it's incoming. That's the thing. I think there's going to be a couple of weeks between then and now. And if you lose money in those couple of weeks, are you going to be revenge trading the drop or the squeeze to the upside? And then you're going to lose your money and then you're not going to be prepared for what comes after. And I think you need to be prepared for what comes after. And the easiest way to do that is go at it with a fresh mind. And if you go at it with like completely tilted because you've lost like 25% of your net worth trading the chop, then I mean, you're not going to do the right thing. I think that's just kind of my message to everyone that matters, like to everyone that cares anyway. So, yeah. As depressing as that sounds, because I hate saying it, right? It's like, it's boring. No one wants to hear it, but it's like, I think that's just what people have to hear. So
we
I'm
didn't
saying
talk
it.
About that COVID and China stuff, but it's in, it's also in a city that I can't pronounce the name where there's like
Shenzhen.
Thank you. There's like a ton of iPhone manufacturing and other, it's like a massive tech hub for China.
Yeah. It's basically so the biggest tech hub
in the
biggest
whole world.
Tech hub in the whole world. Yeah,
that's not good.
at least it's not March. Ah, shit, never mind.
Yep.
One other context, and I'm about to explode you with moving averages. I'm sorry. None of us in crypto, you have, I mean, this is when Bitcoin was created. I pulled the Don and went to a monthly chart on the S&P. So Bitcoin was created basically at the bottom of a big debt cycle, right? Like that, it could not have had any better timing. We actually don't really know what happens for crypto when everything falls apart. And where we are now is kind of the normal inline correction, right? COVID normalized 100 months worth of pricing, right? That's where it bottomed. And that was one of the greatest volatility events in, I don't know, decades. But that was a rebound. It was a rubber band recession or whatever you want to call it. It wasn't this sustained pain. The two big recessions we've had were 2001 and 2 with the tech burst, and then obviously 2008. And then honestly, the economy, most people wouldn't say recovered until at least 2011, 2012. If you can come out of that, if we have a recession, and this is just to say a recession is possible, it's not trying to call it. If we have a recession, if you can come out of that with buying power, you have won. Like, you have really won. And I personally think stagflation or something like that is highly likely. Market results aren't great. At the same time, costs go up. That's what stagflation means. If you can come out of that with buying power, I think you're really winning. And I don't know. I just want to approach the future from a position of control, as Craig has talked about before. That's all I got.
Yeah, that's good. I agree. I'll just say in general, buying the bottom is super overrated. Yeah. If you think about I wrote about this in the article, which I'm shilling for a second time shamelessly. But if you think about the big eye-watering returns or the trades that kind of made it for people, whatever it may be, all of those trades or the overwhelming majority materialized in the conditions after the bottom had taken place, sometimes long, long, long after the bottom had taken place, right? Be it NFTs or Axie or Soluna AVAX, whatever it is. No one's kind of bull market flex is, oh yeah, well, I bought the bottom on Bitcoin and ETH. I mean, maybe for some people, but in the overwhelming majority of cases, at least anecdotally, it's not like a prerequisite for doing well. And it's the conditions that are created after the bottom and on the subsequent trend, rally, whatever it may be. That's when A, it's easier, and B, the returns are wider spread and more abundant. So I think the reason people chase the bottom is because they want the pain to end. But in terms of generating returns, you don't have to really catch the bottom. You can be very late and still do very well. I mean, even BTC, crashed to 3K, and then you had the crazy grind. And then really the easy trade came on the 12K breakout, right? Where it went from 12, it just went up in times infinity. And that's already four times off the bottom, right? Which is a crazy thing to think about. The market bottomed at 3K. You could have bought someone's 4X and you probably had an easier time trading than they did. Which is something worth considering. Obviously, yes, there's a time premium on that, et cetera, but it's, just something to counterbalance the hunger for sniping the bottom tick, if that makes any sense. And, just anecdote, off topic almost, you can invest in other stuff during this period of time. What? Like, I'm finally back in very good shape. Not even markets, like, I'm back in very good shape at the moment. I've kind of been reading more and doing non-crypto interest stuff and spending time with family, etc. And bull markets really take that from you because they create a real opportunity cost to not trading. Like, when you're not in the market, there's a shitty trend line breakout somewhere that's going to lead to a 2x and you missed it and you feel bad about yourself, etc. So I think doing something productive with the freedom, your future self will thank you.
The current circumference of my neck is testament to that.
I mean, Ledger became a TikTok superstar, so there are many things you can do.
Get some hobbies,
Yes.
Dance on the internet. Thank you both. It's been enjoyable, mostly. I appreciate you. Appreciate everybody watching as well. Please go to weeklyopen.com/FTX. If you do choose to invest and trade and track your portfolio, all those good things, you can do it on the FTX app. Go to weeklyopen.com/FTX. Trade with no fees. Track that portfolio. Get all the things you need directly from FTX. Offboard to your bank. You can do that through FTX too. weeklyopen.com/FTX. Thanks so much. Catch you next time.